Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs. Oh! Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Broen. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now, live via Zoom, right after the draft lottery, my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Well, RemIQ in our live YouTube chat has nailed it. We don't want a top pick stealing touches anyway, you know? Like, come on. We're fine. It's fine.
We're here to supplement the core, baby. And you
don't want all that attention. In a lot of ways, I think this was a win for us.
You know who it's not a win for? The top picks in this draft. My goodness.
Yeah, like some rough situations to get dropped into.
And there were some really interesting possibilities. Like, you look at the Pelicans potentially jumping up with such a complete roster. You obviously have the Cavs, which we would have had some interest in.
I mean, even Portland, the Blazers. Yeah. Ugh.
Like, there was just so many situations, and unfortunately, the Orlando Magic got the first pick in the draft. I do think OKC will be interesting. We'll see if they actually start to pivot to trying to play basketball, because they've got talent now. So they're going to have to make a decision on whether or not they want to actually use that talent, or if they're just going to find ways to remain in the lotto for a few more years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if we're talking about the biggest losers, it is, in my opinion, whoever gets drafted at one. It's just such a weird, it's a very unconventional batch of first overall picks. Whether it's going to be Chet, Jabari, Paolo, all of them have some weirdness to their game, all of which I don't feel like Orlando is that well suited to take care of.
Yeah.
To some extent, I guess Chet makes the most sense there, just from the perspective of, maybe it's Jabari just because they need shot creation, but he kind of needs set up. I don't know, man.
It's so weird, man.
It's a weird team.
They do have guards. Orlando does have guards. They have guards in a lot of length.
They have really good guards? Do they have good guards? Do they have good anything? It's a weird team full of players I know, all of whom aren't that good yet.
Well, the nice thing for the Houston Rockets is they picked the third best prospect at 2 last year. So if you're just going to go that route, you can go and do that at 3 now. So they stay at 3. Good for them.
I think Houston, even though they obviously fell in the lotto, they've got whoever they get there at 3 should be awesome for them. Chet, Paolo, Jabari. As much as we've dogged that Rockets decision, and the decision that also gave us Jared Allen, I actually quite like the talent collection they have there. They're just all young and a little volatile. But like, any of those three guys would fit really well in Houston. They feel like a big win to me.
Yeah, I've actually come to really like this draft. At least I'd say about 16 or so guys in this draft I can see the appeal in. So I think Houston's going to come out well. I think a lot of these teams are going to be getting really good prospects. A sneaky team there is also Charlotte. I believe they're picking 13 and 15. And adding players in that range, guys that can probably fill in the rotation, is going to be really good for them. But the Cleveland Cavaliers...
Hold on, before you pivot off that Charlotte thing, just because it's interesting, given the fact where their salary cap is leading them, how they're going to have to probably look to, pay Miles Bridges big money, normally that's a spot where you go, okay, they're probably just going to, they're probably going to try to package those picks and move up.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is actually, they're in a spot where they actually could look to move off a rotation player or two, an expensive one or two.
Well,
knowing that they're going to get some decent draft capital coming in.
You know what that's going to be. That's going to be the DeAndre Ayton sign and trade.
That's an interesting one. That one did not occur to me. I was thinking trying to find a way to poach Gordon Hayward.
I do like the enthusiasm, but you know what? At the end of the day, it still does feel like the Cavs won a lottery in some sense, because all of the pain of last year has led to them getting a pick a lot higher than it should be. This is a team that, if healthy, probably was a 50-win team. We were missing one of our best prospects last year, so you're going to be likely adding Colin Sexton to that mix. And over the last couple of weeks that we've been doing podcasts and basically stalling, I have been doing my best to try to watch YouTube videos, breakdowns. Big shout out to Adam Spinella, who does really good breakdowns on YouTube that I think does a great job of highlighting both the strengths and weaknesses. I resisted my urge to avoid the weakness part of every prospect, because if you watch just the strengths, all of these guys will look like the best players on the planet. But I'm feeling pretty good about the Cavs being
at 14. Are you as dumb as me where you actively get yourself worked up during the strength section and then get so disappointed during the weaknesses section? Because it happens to me every year.
Carter, how long have you been knowing me? Like, of
I
course,
knew the answer to the question as I asked it.
Of course that's what it's going to be. But I do think that this opens up interesting possibilities, both from a trade standpoint, from a standing put standpoint. Like, the Cavs do have a lot of options and choices that they're going to have to make. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit before, but, you know, looking at the possibility of a Caris LeVert extension, and if you don't feel confident in that extension, do you look to be proactive in that situation? Do you look to be proactive with Jetty Osman or Kevin Love or basically any of the combinations outside of the core and see what's available with the pick? But for me, I do think that I've sensed with Cavs Twitter and just talking to people in our Discord and on Twitter and all over the place, that there seems to be the sense that because the Cavs took such a big step forward last year, there's not really room for a young guy there, that we should be focusing a little bit more on the win now. And I do think that there's interesting lessons to be learned from this year's playoffs, as there always are. But when you look at a team like the Philadelphia 76ers that felt that they were ahead of the curve, that they needed to make win-now moves, and they moved off of Mikal Bridges. They drafted him and traded him to Phoenix. And then you have the flip side of that coin, a team like Memphis, who had tons of young talent, but still, because they found a guy that they liked, they moved up in the draft to draft Zaire Williams, and he made an impact for them. Even though he was a raw prospect, they managed to find a guy that could fill a role. And even the Golden State Warriors, like, you look at Jonathan Kuminga, who's a very raw prospect, but given the strengths that they had with the supporting cast around him, they managed to carve out a role that highlighted his strengths. So I do think that that's going to be a really interesting balance for the Cavs to find, because on the one hand, probably not a ton of rotation minutes available. On the other, you really, especially at this point of the team building process, you can't just throw away opportunities to add young talent.
I think you're 100% right. And I think that in a lot of ways, that realization of the roster crunch, short of a consolidation move, even if there is someone, even if they take a guy, let's say that it's Agbaji that they take, who we've talked about, not at length, but we've talked about quite a bit on this pod so far, the ready-made prospect kind of guy. He probably isn't going to get to, he's not going to start the year in the rotation. So, like at least that's my expectation if everyone's back and healthy.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, why not go a little more upside here? Why not try to find that diamond in the rough, that player who fell for whatever reason or was, you know, kind of the more of a project, and say, hey, let's just get a guy. No pressure, pal.
Yeah.
We don't need you this year. We don't need you. We might not even need you yet next year. But we're going to let you develop on your own timeline. And if you hit, you're going to hit so big that we're going to look like geniuses afterward. I mean, I think obviously interesting, you know, health circumstances, but think about Michael Porter Jr. going to the Nuggets.
Yeah.
They could have taken just a rotation ready player. But they said, hey, we're pretty good right now. If we draft this guy and he hits, we might be really, really good. And obviously, the reason Michael Porter Jr. fell is starting to bite him now. So this is not a non-risk strategy. But I do think, as you've been throwing out some names to me more and more, I'm starting to see, yeah, let's take a shot at one of these weirder players.
Yeah, and I've been trying my best to pepper you with my draft crushes, and we'll get into some of those guys that I've grown fond of after watching a fair bit of videos and breakdowns and reading just way too much draft content over the last couple of weeks. But I do think, like, I think it's informative to look at a team like the Miami Heat as an example. Like, it's going to be a really interesting few years for the Cavs and for this podcast as we break down the team building, because nobody bats 1,000. Like, it's, there's going to be mistakes. There's going to be risks. I mean, you can look even within the last few years, like the Kevin Love extension. There was a big portion of time where that wasn't looking good. And just like from a fit on and off the court standpoint, there were questions. And then you look at the impact that he had off the court the last couple of years. And then finally that translating to on the court impact, those decisions can turn around. You look at a team like the Miami Heat, one of the best organizations in the league. There's a reason why they're in the conference finals again. And there was a point where they had massive contracts out to like Tyler Johnson, Dion Waiters, Hassan Whiteside. Ugh. You got to be able to make those pivots and take some chances when they're there. But the Heat are also a great example of the value that you can find in this late lottery. Tyler Hero with the 13th pick, Bam Adebayo at the 14th pick 2 years prior. Like, these are guys that are now like franchise pillars for them. So I wouldn't be so quick to write off this pick and just say trade it for like a 27-year-old with not a lot of upside but helps now. Like, I think that these are going to be difficult decisions, obviously, for the front office to weigh, but I wouldn't waste this opportunity, or I wouldn't dismiss this opportunity and pretend that it's less than it is. Like, this is a real, real chance.
It might be their last lottery pick of the next 5-6 years if things are going well.
Decade, baby. Go bigger. Go bigger, Carter. It's the offseason. We need to get a little reckless here. But you're completely right. And we've talked about how the toughest thing to add in the league is playmaking wings or 3-and-D wings. Like, every team wants them. The best way to do that often is through the draft, because once a team manages to bring one of those guys in, they don't let them go unless it's for a haul. And if they are letting those guys go, it usually is in the type of consolidation move, the big game hunting that we've been talking about, that maybe at some point with the collection of assets the Cavs have may become available to them.
Would you rather take a project that, you know, that is maybe missing one thing, like, you know, that is,
well, a project wouldn't be missing one thing. Sure.
But let's talk about a guy. Like, would you rather take someone who projects to be an okay role player at 14, but if they add, let's say, a jumper, there's a lot of guys that are a jumper away from being a really valuable role player. Or would you rather just go big game hunting? Like, just take a total weirdo spot that's like a guy who's maybe got 2 or 3, 4 things to really, really work on. Mm-hmm. And maybe see if you can find that big playmaking wing or someone like that, that kind of, you know, takes you over the, you know, over the top if they hit, but have a very high likelihood of not hitting.
I don't think I would go complete raw prospect. Like, there are going to be those type of guys available, but I think something really important to me is whoever they pick, I think they have to have one skill, one NBA skill that you can kind of count on early on, whether that's shot making, whether that's their defensive impact. Like, they need to have one thing that you can kind of rely on them for, because if you have that one skill and it fits a need for the Cavs, you can say, okay, you're going to play this defined role for us, and then we're going to build off of it. Like, when you look at Ochai Agbaji, he's a more complete prospect than some of the other guys we'll talk about, but I feel like you can take his catch and shoot game, his off-screen game, and kind of the stuff that he does as a cutter, like all the stuff that fills in the cracks, you can take that, find a spot for that in the rotation, and then build off of those skill sets, develop counters, and whether it's individual counters for him or things that the team can run based off of the actions he runs. I think that would be the direction that I would want to go. You have to have that one skill. Like, I don't want just like a pure project that just doesn't really like does everything, but nothing at a NBA level yet.
So I guess here's where we probably start naming names. Who do you love right now? If they land in our lap, you are just the happiest camper.
Carter, I have fallen. I have fallen hard for a prospect. This love of mine reminds me of the Scotty Barnes love that we had before the lottery last year, where we're just looking at the tape and we're like, I love the energy. I love the defense. Yeah, he's raw. But if the Cavs stay in like that 5-6 range, Scotty's that guy. And for me this year, it's Tari Eason. And yes, he did spend an extra year in college. First year wasn't as successful, transferred to LSU, came in off the bench. But my goodness, do I love this guy. He reminds me so much of Jeremy Grant, who we've been pining for and kind of saying, hey, that would be a really nice fit. The defensive effort.
Oh, my gosh. Just watch that windmill in the highlights if you're watching on YouTube.
Is this the first bit that you've watched him, some of the highlights?
I have not seen that particular one, but yeah, he is an athletic freak, I'll tell you that much.
He is someone that translates defense into offense, gets out in transition, 6'8", 7'3", wingspan, good help defender. He provides some rim protection, second chance points, definitely needs to work on his offensive consistency. There are stretches where the jumper looks great, other times where it doesn't. Handle can be a little bit loose, and he loves to go right. But I just really, really like what he can bring to the table. There is the shooting touch there. The form looks good. That it's something that I feel like the Cavs can build on. And when you're talking about a guy that maybe you draft and he comes in off the bench behind Lauri Markkanen and just kind of gives you that change of pace, provides the defensive versatility that the Cavs are really lacking. Like, that's one of the things that I think when you look at how teams defended the Cavs and the ability to put length on someone like Darius Garland and blow plays up, as much as we have that length with Mobley and Allen, we didn't have that on the perimeter, at least not to this extent. And his ability to defend multiple positions, to get out and run, to finish above the rim, like, that's all stuff that I feel like you can carve out a role in and find a way for him to contribute while you help polish his game and kind of make him a more complete player. But the stuff he does well now is exciting as hell to me.
I mean, if you're watching on YouTube, we've got his Tankathon page up. Other than his draft age, which he is going to be old. He's going to be 21 when he was drafted. Other than that, I mean, it's all pretty great. I mean, a combined 4.5 steals and blocks per 36, big, a good free throw percentage.
Guy. Big stocks guy.
A great free throw percentage for a guy with a developing jumper. You know, that's one of those great indicators that really, really matters. Yeah, I mean, like, the playmaking doesn't appear to be there at all,
mm-hmm.
but,
that's,
you know,
that's a weakness,
but, you know, like, that's not necessarily something the Cavs need. Like, I mean, and frankly, like, I think your Jeremy Grant comparison is actually pretty apt, because the reality is, like, he's, you know, he is also that kind of player that's kind of more of a bucket, a play finisher than a play starter. But, you know, the Cavs have enough play starters, especially mm-hmm. with Evan Mobley as a facilitator in the high post, that this makes some sense. Can he play the three now?
Yeah, I think he's a 3-4 more than a 4-3. Like, I think he can absolutely play that role. I wouldn't anticipate him being a starter. I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of competition with Lauri Markkanen being back, and even probably Caris LeVert maybe on the wing as well to compete for those roles. But I think he absolutely can play the three. Like, I think he's more of a three than Lamar Stevens or maybe even Dean Wade are. Like, I think both of those guys are 4-3s.
I mean, damning with faint praise a little bit, because I think those guys are just straight up fours.
Right.
But you know, that is kind of the value of what this Cavs team does, is if you get a big wing that is a 3-4 mm-hmm. that can, you know, guard the perimeter defensively, but, you know, with Lauri Markkanen out there at the four, you know, in some of those lineups, or Kevin Love out there in some of these lineups, you can kind of supplement the spacing mm-hmm. if his NBA three isn't quite ready yet.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before, but this is the luxury of team building around Garland, Mobley, and Allen. You can play fours like a Lauri Markkanen at the three because of the defensive versatility they have. You already know that Darius can play off of another point guard if you got a big point guard and that's the best talent available to you. You can be flexible in that way. Like, it does make team building a lot easier when you have guys with that kind of versatility, where Garland's offensive versatility to play on and off ball and the defensive versatility of Mobley and Allen really do allow you to kind of get a little funky and get a little weird. And Tari Eason is a guy that really fits that mold. Like, I've kind of narrowed in on four prospects that I like. And I think all of these guys fit that definition of bringing an NBA skill to the table that fills a Cavs need. And probably the most raw of the four, I would say, is Dyson Daniels, who did play in the G League. I'm going to do the really lazy thing. I'm sorry here, Carter, but I'm going to compare someone from one country to another player from the country. And he reminds me a lot of Josh Giddey, where you just, the jumper isn't necessarily there yet, but he's so high IQ. He's so active, like real high motor. The defensive versatility he has is really, really exciting. The outlet passes that he throws are awesome. Like, he fills that playmaking gap, and he's a big playmaker. He's someone that can get up above the rim. He's a strong finisher. He's got a floater game. Like, I think that there's enough positive indicators there that, hey, this is someone that can come in, once again, come in off the bench, provide that playmaking juice, and just kind of IQ his way into minutes for the Cavs.
Can I push back on the Daniels thing? Because he seems like a really strong prospect. Don't get me wrong. He's young as hell. Mm-hmm. He's a freak. He's got
there's probably a chance that he's not there at 14. We should probably note that as well.
Well, yeah. Right now on Tankathon, he's mocked to go 8th. Just because that's what I have up right now.
Yeah.
This is such a weird draft to me, Justin, because the Cavs need more than anything a 3 with size.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone on the board for them is going to be a 2 with decent size, but not great size.
Mm-hmm.
Or a 4 that's, or a 3 that's really a 4. You know, a guy like Eason right now, who's really kind of in that hybrid model. There aren't a lot of pure 3s.
Mm-hmm.
In this draft, and frankly, a lot of those guys, but even at the top, you know, like Banchero and Jabari were kind of marketed as 3s, and now, you know, we're pretty, I think everyone's pretty much listing them as 4s at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, the thing with Daniels is, okay, so he's 6'6", he's skinny, you know, like, are you going to be able to play him minutes at the 3? And if not, can you afford it? Can you afford to have a guy who can't shoot on this Cavs team? I think he'd make a great prospect for a lot of mm-hmm. teams. Can you, like, if he's got all these intangibles, don't we already have an intangibles guy on the perimeter? Like, different intangibles, don't get me wrong, but, like, aren't we already kind of, like, dealing, like, how many projects can you have out on the wing mm-hmm. at the two guard at a time? You know, I just feel like,
see, I feel he would eat
Okoro, or Okoro would eat him.
I feel pretty strongly that he's not a 2. Like, he does have guard skills, but we'll have to wait for the official measurements. But I think he's, like, easily 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", even. He did shoot better towards the end of the G League season. I believe he shot 45% over the last 10 games there. Free throw percentage, 74%. I do give a little bit of a nod to guys playing in the G League, because you
get bonus points. Bump all your stats up. It's like getting graded on a curve. This is harder than college basketball.
Right. You're playing against fully grown men, and you're playing against kind of more sophisticated systems that resemble what basketball actually is now. So I do give him a lot of credit for that. I do think that there is an opportunity for him. I think his defensive versatility is really legitimate, and he does different things on the defensive end than someone like Isaac.
Another good stocks guy, 3 combined per 36,
right,
by the way.
Right. And I feel like, I mean, one of the things we talked about in the last podcast is we really want the Cavs to get out and run, to play with some pace. And I think that he's a guy that would help facilitate that. Like, if you're talking about him coming in off of the bench, Colin, whether he's starting or not, he's probably going to get staggered if you're looking at the history of how they've used Colin Sexton with the bench. And I would love to see that kind of speed. Like, I would love to see Colin Sexton's open court transition speed with a talented passer like this. And I think that Dyson Daniels absolutely fits that playmaking need for the Cavs. He fits a defensive need where I think that he can be that three defensively that they really, really need to just change up the looks. Like if you look at that series against the Atlanta Hawks, you can't play Lamar there because Lamar is going to foul the guards, like especially someone as shifty and difficult to defend as Trae Young. You don't have the option to flex him over. Obviously, you didn't have Dean Wade there. That would have been helpful. But I think Dyson Daniels is someone that can play the three and switch onto a guard defensively and do that well or move up a position and defend. So I think the defensive versatility and the playmaking and just kind of the IQ that he has, I really do feel like there is a way to carve out minutes for him. I do agree. Like, this is going to be a little bit tricky when you're talking about bringing one of these prospects into the mix. It's going to create a real competition for playing time with someone like Isaac Okoro, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. And if you do have guys, so many guys that whether it's who you draft that is more ready than you expected, or let's say that occurs and Isaac has taken a big step forward in the offseason, like you can create minutes in other ways. You can make other moves on the roster. I think the young talent needs to be prioritized to some extent.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I do want to ask you a question though, Justin. The Cavs did not jump. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about trying to move up via trade? Because a guy like AJ Griffin seems like the perfect fit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, so, like a wing with, the same height as Dyson Daniels, but, you know, a cool 40 pounds heavier at the same age.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit more of a thick boy at the position, NBA player father. What do you think about, and we've talked about consolidation a couple of times. That would be a weird one, you know, because this is a team that, you know, normally when you trade existing talent to trade up in the draft, it is an admitted, one step back, two steps forward kind of plan. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's something the Cavs should even really be considering?
Man, I really have to say, like, that comes down to talent evaluation. Like, actually, AJ Griffin's an interesting guy to bring up because he does have health concerns. And maybe if that is somebody that maybe falls into the Michael Porter Jr. category where everyone's assuming he goes top eight, but then people get a little concerned. And if he were to slip to the Cavs, absolutely, you take that risk. As much as I want to avoid health concerns and I never want to see player games missed ever again for the Cleveland Cavaliers, like you take that risk at that point. I really do think like it comes down to talent evaluation. Like if you feel that it is possible to move up and get the prospect that you love and you're comfortable with the cost, yeah, obviously you would entertain that. I mean, Memphis did that with Williams last year, and it's so hard for me to even discuss that as a possibility because on principle, I'm so opposed to trading back. Like, I just don't think that ever works out. So, like, it's great for me to advocate for a team to trade back to the Cleveland Cavaliers, but at the same time, if I were in their shoes, I wouldn't be doing that because
I don't think I'd trade up either. I think I'd rather take a swing on a riskier prospect and just roll with the core.
Trading back is some football stuff. Like that's what it really is.
Why are you talking about trading back? I'm talking about trading up.
No. I'm saying for those other teams.
I see what you're saying.
That kind of mentality is a football thing where you have a massive roster that you need to fill and whatnot. Like NBA, it comes down to getting that top talent, and that's 100% the most important thing. So if it's there and they feel confident with it and there isn't the concern with the cost, like maybe it is like a Caris LeVert type thing where it's, man, like we gave up a fair bit to get him, but given investment in Sexton and this opportunity that came up to really add another player that we love that fits with the core that we feel so confident in, yeah, like take that kind of a swing, but I just can't really foresee those type of situations because, I mean, when you're a team in the lottery, you need to add a top talent, and there's not a lot of teams that are in a position to move away from an upper echelon talent to go back to 14.
I got to ask you this as well. This is one player I know you don't have on your list right now, but he's currently mocked the Cavs. And I think it was Dr. Claw in the YouTube chat just asked about Usman Jang,
mm-hmm.
Who played last year in the NBL. This guy seems more in the kind of the paradigm of what I was talking about, of the uber raw prospect, the 3-4 things that need to happen for this to work, but if it happens, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
He's not someone that kind of has cracked my top four. I get it. Like when you look at someone like Usman Jang or Nikola Jovic, like those are guys that, like, you'd have to have a lot of confidence in your player development. Like Jovic,
shouldn't the Cavs have that at this point?
You should,
to play devil's advocate.
You should, but at the same time, you need to have the reps to actually develop a player. Like, I think that's one of the things that we ran into with Isaac Okoro, where when the expectations for the team are elevated and there is a crunch for minutes, like, if the Cavs were fully healthy last season and they had Sexton and Rubio for the full year, Okoro's minutes would probably be a lot smaller than they were, because he was further along in the development curve and we weren't able to give him the same opportunities to take risks, to fail and, you know, work on that skill set development. I think it gets a little bit trickier. Like, I think that's why, for me, what I advocate for is someone that has an NBA skill that's ready, that you can find a role for them and then build off of that role from a skill development standpoint. And Jang, to me, he's so raw. Like, he does bring the playmaking, he does bring the length, but that 3-point shot, the finishing on the inside, like, none of that is there yet.
I do recall another player with horrific NBL stats that we decided we hated that turned out to be pretty okay.
Who was that?
LaMelo Ball.
Okay. That is fair. I did say, in my defense in that draft, Carter, I did say that LaMelo was the only player in that draft with all-star upside in my eyes. I was really, really wrong. I was wildly wrong on Anthony Edwards. But you know what? At least I did give LaMelo a little bit of props there. But,
you know who was right on Anthony Edwards was this guy. I loved Anthony Edwards.
You did. I will give you some credit there. Realistically, is there any chance that Jang passes the OKC Thunder? Because they have 2 picks, like, and they have a pick ahead of the Cavs. Like, they are 100% taking that guy, because he fits what they want, which is upside without the ability to impact wins now.
I don't know, man. I they've got so many of these weird oversized projects that, like, they might actually want to take some basketball players at some point.
It's true. Well, it depends if they're still pretending Poku's a thing.
Yeah, he's not. Oh my god. And shame on you, Draft Twitter, for enabling this Barnum and Bailey clown show.
I saw someone on Twitter, I think it was Kofi, that called Chet Holmgren Cousin Chet, and I couldn't stop laughing as he's just standing there all awkward.
What a name. What a name for a top basket. What a name and face for a top basketball prospect.
Honestly, if we're really being truthful with ourselves, Carter, if I were to tell you that the Orlando Magic got the number one overall pick and there was a prospect named Chet projected to go there, that just fits, right?
It just fits. I don't know. What a weird draft, Justin. Like, I know there's some there. I'll say this. You've dove in further than I have, admittedly.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I do not like this draft. I think this draft is weird. I think any of the top 4 or 5 could fail.
Mm-hmm.
Or just be average. Like, I think at the top, it's pretty mediocre. And then the middle
Carter,
class.
You're hurting me. You're hurting me because there's at least 2 Canadians in this lottery.
Well, I understand that. And I respect that. All I'm saying is it's weird. That is that, like, every player, even the really good ones like Chet, are weird. You know, a guy like Eason even is weird. Like, what is that skill set? and what is his, like, why did he have such a bad year at Cincinnati before heading to LSU? It's just a strange, every player has something really, really bad about them.
Yep.
And normally you have more jacks of all trades. That's why Agbaji is so interesting, because, like, it's funny, you look at his Tankathon page. I'm going to pull it up real quick on the live stream. What's funny is, you know, they have these, like, these stat strengths, pluses and minuses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so funny because it's like, okay, like, everyone else has, like, 4 pluses or 4 minuses on a few things. It's just, like, little 1 plus. A few single. Like, there's no like crazy strengths or crazy weaknesses other than being old and then 3 assist based stats.
Yeah,
like everything for him is just like, yeah, he's just a basketball player. He doesn't mess up too much and he doesn't do too much great either.
Yeah, honestly, Agbaji is a guy that I think slots into the Cavs rotation the easiest. And he's someone that I remain very interested in because he is such a good catch and shoot player. He's someone that can come off of screens. He fills a defensive need for the Cavs. He's a good cutter, above the rim player. You look at some of the baseline cuts he does for lobs, like that's really exciting and something that I feel like JB Bickerstaff and the coaching staff in general can really exploit. He's someone that I really feel like there is untapped potential there because, yes, he does lack self-creation and he does lack playmaking, 2 things that the Cavs really need. But you can bring that in other ways, right? Like if you bring in a veteran point guard, you bring back Colin Sexton, you have Darius Garland, you have Evan
Mobley.
I'm not
as worried about that as other people. I think if Mobley is going to be as good as he needs to be, it's not as big of a problem. And if he's not as good as he needs to be, then who cares?
Yeah, the playmaking...
The whole thing's bunk at that point.
The playmaking and creation is probably... Like, it is a need for the Cavs, but it's the need I worry about the least when it comes to the 14th pick. Like, if their scouting and player development staff feels very confident that someone like Daniels is that, like, plus-plus tier playmaker, that they can develop him into that kind of guy... I understand that line of thinking, and that's exciting because when you add those types of players, we've seen throughout the playoffs, that can make a massive, massive difference, especially when you're talking about a playmaking wing. It's not hard to imagine how you can weaponize a player like that. But when you look at someone like Agbaji, the fact that he is able to step in and fulfill those kinds of roles for the Cavs.
Can we talk about inbounds defense in college basketball? This dude just got 6 lobs off of inbounds passes in a row.
Nick Nurse is out there defending the inbounds, apparently.
My word, guys, come on.
Let's do a little bit better college basketball. But because he has those skills that can slot into the rotation right away, you can build off of that so easily. Like, I think Cam Johnson's a great example of that. Mikal Bridges, I don't know why Phoenix tinkered with his jumper at the start. It took a little longer for him to catch on than I would have expected, but I think there's untapped potential there. You get him with NBA trainers. You put him in a position where his strengths are exactly what the Cavs need and his weaknesses are addressed by existing Cavs players. That, to me, is really exciting. I think people get way too hung up on the age. We are still talking about 22. I know what washed feels like. I am experiencing what washed feels like right now. 22 is not that long.
Every day, buddy.
I started softball yesterday. First at bat, Carter, I blew out my back. So,
Justin,
we are back. We are back, baby.
You know what I was just thinking about? I actually, this is an embarrassing aside, but I was just thinking about how Millie's going to go to school in a few years, you know, not yet, but you know, yeah. 4 or 5 years. And she's going to tell people that her dad has a podcast. And everyone in the room is going to roll their eyes.
She's never going to talk about you. Don't you worry.
Your old ass dad has a podcast. Like, this was cooler. This was more okay when we were like 23, 24, yeah. 25. Now we're just old, man. Yeah.
No. This is going to keep me young forever, Carter. Don't you worry about it. And it's going to be like the Canadian girlfriend only. Yeah, my dad's got a podcast co-host up in Canada. Yeah. It's a little weird. So I guess the flip side of Agbaji is someone like Malachi Branham, who...
A player I'm not interested in at all.
Really? Okay. So go off. Why don't you find him interesting?
I just think he is... I think like he kind of speaks to the stuff that we were talking about of like addressing some of the scoring needs, the playmaking, the get you a bucket needs. And like the Cavs already have a lot of those kinds of players. And, like, he just doesn't come close to solving what the Cavs' biggest needs are, which are big wings to help accommodate for small backcourt play, defense. And, like, I don't know, man. He just seems like one of those guys who, like, if the Cavs didn't have Colin Sexton, probably, and then Karras as well, mm-hmm. I'd be a little bit more in. But, like, I just don't see where he is 75% as good as those guys in the next 3 years. So if they're here, why am I trying to take a very similar archetype?
That's a good point, because there are redundancies between he and Karis LeVert. Like, I think they are very similar in play style, where they're both very good pick and roll ball handlers. They can create their own shots. I think Branham plays a little more under control than LeVert. He's very strong. When you see him get
much to better the... shooter, or yeah. at least as a prospect, I guess. Yeah, we haven't seen him at an NBA line yet, but you
yeah,
see what
but I like the fact that despite him being so young, he is really strong. Like, when you see him going to the lane, when he's taking contact, he's still getting to where he's going rather than getting pushed away from the basket. And I think that that's a very encouraging sign. The shot creation is really good. The 3-point shooting's there. Like I said, there's a ton of redundancy with LeVert, but I would not let the presence of Karis LeVert move me off of him, because, like, you can never have too many guys that can create a shot for themselves and others in the pick and roll. And I just think that he has a lot of scoring talent. He's got a lot of playmaking juice. There's so much work to be done on the defensive end of the floor. And that, to me, is a little bit concerning. But if you're talking about upside and okay, we're going to draft a guy and he's going to develop into a hell of an offensive talent, I think that he is your best bet that you're going to have at the 14th pick.
I cannot shake the mental image of Mobley setting up on the left wing and him waving him off to go cook. Like, I just see it in my soul. And I don't know, man. I see it. I get it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's young as hell. He went to St. Vincent, St. Mary. That's got to mean something. Yeah, you know, like,
baby. I love the storylines. You know what, Carter? That's, I got to admit, and I'm not proud to admit this, the storyline aspect does, like, weigh into it for me. And I'm not even from the area, but when I look, like, at history and, like, how the Warriors became such a good dynasty and the way that they were able to amass talent, a lot of that was injury, bad luck at the start, lucky breaks. And the Cavs having this opportunity with the 14th pick in a lot of ways is a lucky break. And the fact that there's a player available there that went to St. Vincent, St. Mary's, that went to Ohio State, it just, like, there's the destiny aspect of this that I can be so easily swayed by. And I mean, that's what this podcast is all about, right? It's about falling in love with stuff irrationally and storylines and finding ways to love this team. So I could be talked into him, but to me, he's behind someone like Eason as well as Abashi, like, and even Daniels. But Daniels, I haven't, like, weighed as much because I just kind of anticipate him to be a draft riser, similar to Josh Giddey last year.
Yeah, I don't think Daniels will be there.
Yeah, so I, to me, Eason and Abashi are the guys that I feel best about. But at the same time, Branham, to me, is kind of that, let's take a swing and try to get a dynamic offensive talent because we know that we have a solid foundation on the defensive end of the floor.
Can I tell you what a lot of my reaction is coming down to? Is, like, the Cavs, you know, I just want someone who's like 6'8 on this team. That's all I want. I want some 6'8 dudes with mobility. You know, like Lamar Stevens, who is not an elite talent by any means, just by virtue of being 6'8 and pretty athletic, carved out very important, meaningful minutes for on this Cavs team this year. Mm-hmm. They are dying for someone with big wing size. I'm not talking good wing size. I'm talking, like, legit, like bigger than other people's wings size. The Cavs don't have anyone like that right now, except Lauri Markkanen, who is playing out of position. There's just no way around it. He's playing, and you know what else they don't have is they don't have anybody with a big ass.
You didn't see that picture of DG? He's definitely been doing some squats, man.
He's not been skipping like that, and I respect that, DG. But you know what I mean, like. If there's a thing that this Cavs team needs, like, they don't have anyone built like PJ Tucker that just moves people using their core, you know? And, like, I look at a guy like Branham and I just see a bucket getter that is going to do okay. You know, mm-hmm. If they take Branham, I'm sure he will be helpful. Yeah. But like, does he move the needle for me? Like some of these other guys we're talking about, I don't see it personally.
Yeah, and I do need to apologize to some of our listeners, because as we do this draft coverage between now and June's draft, like, we probably are going to not dwell too much on the Cavs' two other picks, because they do have two second round picks.
Don't make me scout the 58th guy on a big board, guys.
Well, when we bring on a draft expert, I'm sure we will ask about it. But Carter, when you're talking about length, there is a guy at number 40, and surprise, surprise, he is Canadian. I feel like he's going to rise because I just saw his combine measurements. He came in a small forward out of Canada in high school, did not go to college, but he's old enough to be eligible for the draft. Came in at 6'11 with a 7'2 wingspan, Carter. Leonard Miller out of Canada.
Oh, I found highlights, Justin, and they look like they're at a YMCA, but let's pop them on.
That looks like where I played high school basketball. That's what that looks like. That is the most Canadian thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Wildly raw. And maybe that's like a fun swing. Like, there's actually a couple of Canadians. Like, you look at Caleb Houston, who's projected to maybe be a second round pick. I think that he's interesting. Was considered to be kind of a lotto talent before, not doing much at Michigan. But, you know, nice looking jumper. Maybe someone that you can stash with the Charge and develop.
Justin, I think I saw one of your second cousins in these highlights. That's crazy.
and then, of course, with the second round picks, there's also the sentimental picks, Carter. We got Pete Nance in this draft and Isaiah Mobley. That would be fun. I don't know if Pete Nance is good at podcasting, but I'm sure we would try our best to find out.
I respect that. Is Nance on the big board right now for on Tankathon? I do not think he is.
I haven't seen him.
Nor is Mobley.
I did see Draft Express kind of tweeting out that he's doing really well in the scrimmages. So
Nance boys, they just know how to play basketball, Justin.
They do know how to play basketball. And this one's got a little bit of a jump shot and is apparently close to 6'11". So who knows? Maybe that could be a fun possible reunion with the Nance family. That would make me happy.
For anyone curious, the two folks mocked to the Cavs at 39, Dalen Terry, who is definitely a person I've heard of out of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 50, Andrew Nimhard out of Gonzaga, an old prospect, but he's 22, but 6'5 point guard, a little bit of size. That could be kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think there's going to be options, and it'll be interesting to see.
You hope one of your two guys, if you make both those picks, you hope one of them makes the team. That's where you're at.
Yeah. You hope, and you look at some of the success they've had with second round or undrafted guys. So, I mean, Lamar Stevens, Dean Wade, like you can call them like second round talents. Who gets picked in the second round? Sometimes like
there's a lot of shoot.
Yeah. There's a lot of factors that go into it. They're all in that mix, but there's been at least success there before. So we'll see. Maybe they can find some diamonds in the rough there. Carter, We would not be responsible if we didn't talk a little bit about me being right. Me being right about the Philadelphia 76ers and that fraud James Harden. The way that Sixers fans came for me when I said that Daryl Morey closed the title window with his Harden obsession. Look at it now. Look at it now. I know that Embiid had a fractured face, but let's be honest. Miami is not as good as Milwaukee and Boston. Carter, you can take a victory lap because I think it's pretty clear that Milwaukee was the best team in this conference. And again, that's probably a good reminder that health can be a major, major factor when it comes to this. I know Cavs fans don't need to hear that, but come on, Philly. You're not even close. And I just don't see a path for them getting realistically better. And I think the real winner here is teams like the Cavs and the rest of the Eastern Conference that wants to compete in the future, because one of the best players in the prospect, MVP caliber Joel Embiid, got stuck with James Harden.
Yeah, I mean, it feels good to see justice served. Though it sucks. I hate these playoffs, Justin.
Really?
I hate too many teams. That's, I think, really the crux of my problem, because I hate Boston. I hate Miami. I hate Golden State.
Dude, a Golden State-Boston final, like, I feel like
it's going to kill me.
I feel like we are on path to a Boston Celtics championship right now, and I don't like that feeling. I really don't feel good about
it. How could you feel anything else? Warriors don't look nearly as good as they've been. No. I do not think the Mavs are ready, though. I mean, if Luka's just going to shred everyone like that, maybe he just waltzes to the freaking title and, you know, cements his path as a top 10 all-time dude just this year. But yeah, I mean, how could you not think
Is Dallas kind of the one like emotional pick where you're like, hey, I would feel kind of good to see that happen?
Oh, it'd be definitely fun to watch Dallas win, and it would mean the other teams didn't, and I hate all these other teams.
It's much more
about my disdain for the other franchises than my affection for Dallas.
See, Carter, you're feeding into the narrative. You're feeding into the Heat culture narrative that people hate them and they disrespect them. I saw Ethan Skolnick tweet that the Miami Heat were the most disrespected one seed in the history of the NBA. And they aren't the most disrespected one seed in the last year. Nobody disrespected them as much as the Utah Jazz. Know what the Miami Heat are, Carter? They are the San Antonio Spurs. We know they're good. We're just not interested in talking about them. Just like the Duncan Spurs. We know it's a good organization. They are just not interesting. I respect Miami Heat. They are really good. We're going to make jokes about your fans. Tough luck. Every fan base gets made fun of for whatever makes us weird. I'm sure there's people that feel like Cavs fans are weird for various reasons. I don't know why they would ever think such things. I don't know why anyone would ever say such a thing about me. But yeah, Heat fans, you're going to get mocked for showing up late to games. That is what it is. You left right before the Ray Allen shot. You're going to get jokes about that. But people don't disrespect the Miami Heat. You're just boring.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And the Heat culture stuff, and that's the other thing. Everyone just I almost said something really inappropriate for a Cavs Zone podcast. Everyone just gives him so much praise for Heat culture. What do you mean you're disrespected? Every media member in the league holds your culture up as this, you know, unattainable standard, which, by the way, it is so attainable. And I don't get it, man. I hate him. I hate him so much.
Oh, I don't. I don't, because to me, I find them funny. And some of this is I really like the people that cover the team. I think they do a great job.
I like the people that cover the team, but they are also psychos.
I know, but they're psychos in a funny way. Like they own up to it. Guys like Giancarlo, Alf, everyone at Heat Beat, Five Reasons, like they do really good work. But you know what? They are all psycho. But I did enjoy Jimmy Butler destroying Philadelphia after they let him go. The Tobias Harris over me rant was hilarious. Could have been even funnier if you went
what a dick.
If you went factually accurate on that one, and I think Lebatard Show pointed this out, but like if you read a lot of the reporting at the time, it was actually choosing Al Horford over Jimmy Butler, which is
It was a lot of things. It was Ben Simmons over Jimmy Butler. It was them just saying we can't have our two best perimeter players being dudes who can't shoot from more than 15 feet out.
It did give me like, and then you have Luka doing that to Phoenix, who passed on him. It was just like,
can we talk about that series real quick?
Sure.
So I feel like the only responsible thing to do is to pick the Warriors in that series, because I don't care how good Luka Doncic is. The Suns scored 27 points and a half.
People keep doing basketball math, and it drives me nuts because they're like, well, if they did that to the Suns, and the Suns had this record, and if you win by this many points versus this team, it means you're going to win by this many points versus this team. That's not how real basketball is.
Their defensive personnel sucks. They're playing Davis Bertans rotational minutes.
The no trick pony.
They are playing Luka, who barely tries. Barely on a good day tries on defense. They're playing Spencer Dinwiddie, who barely tries on a good day. They are playing so many they're playing Dwight Powell. Did I miss him becoming the great rim protector of our generation? Maxi Kleba?
You did. He's fantastic.
Like, what are we doing here? Like, it's so insane that the Suns just forgot how to play basketball. In the second game of that series, they got a good look on around 400 straight possessions to close the game. and then forgot how to play basketball. I'm not taking credit away from Jason Kidd, who I'm sure has made some nice adjustments, but like this is, that is more Suns meltdown than Mavs win, and I will not be convinced otherwise.
I think Phoenix was hurt. Like I know people made jokes about Chris Paul, like injury reports coming out after the fact, but he clearly wasn't moving around right. He had the quad issue, and Devin Booker came back from
clamped by Jalen Brunson. I would hope you're hurt.
And Devin Booker came back from the hamstring injury, and there's no way that healed properly in time. He's been dealing with that all season. Like they clearly weren't healthy, and I think that that needs to be kind of factored into the equation. But I just love the symmetry of Philly moving on from Jimmy Butler and him beating them, Phoenix picking DeAndre Ayton over Luka, and Luka just destroying their soul, probably beating them in their best chance to win a championship. Like that to me is just kind of fun to look at the poetry of that. And it also made me feel like, Carter, I do not want Colin Sexton to leave the Cavs. I know a lot of the reporting is suggesting he'll be back, and I know we're both on the same page that we want him back. But if that man ended up on the Detroit Pistons or something, I just feel like there is going to be some point, some game, where he breaks our damn hearts. The way that the Spencer Dinwiddie game winners broke our hearts back in the day when we were pining for Luka Doncic. He's just one of those guys, one of those competitors that you don't want to end up on his list. Because we saw him do it to the Brooklyn Nets when they first made their debut as well.
Here's the way I feel about this core, about this front office, about this coaching staff. I would rather them completely fail before I move on. I'm not trying to get out ahead of anything. I'm not trying to guess that Colin might let me down someday. I'd rather wait to see it happen. And ride with the guy till it happens.
Yeah.
And you know what? If we're a playoff run or two in, they sign Colin, and it's not working. Hey, you know, hard decisions have to be made on the way to building a title team. It happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Raptors traded DeMar DeRozan. You know, they're one of their standard bearers for you know, a generation of Raptors basketball to go get Kawhi for 1 year and win a title. So, you know, I'm not saying we won't have to have that discussion, but I'm certainly going to give Khan the chance.
Yeah,
if I'm running this team to prove that he can be a winning player.
Like the conversation we had going into last offseason was we just wanted 1 year. 1 year to develop proof of concept because we liked what Kobe was putting together. We thought that, hey, there is a chance that this could really work out. And the reason why, like obviously, we don't have any inside information when it comes to what's going to happen with the team. I will forever be appreciative of the fact that we kind of get our space to kind of speculate from what's out there.
That's why they don't tell us stuff.
Yeah.
So we have space.
Yeah, it's also, hey, let's keep the podcast sounding like the podcast has always sound, which is just us kind of trying to draw context clues from the reports that are out there. But when you look at it, like, I just really like this group, and I want to see them have a chance to really find their own legs, to come into their own. And Colin's a big part of that. Isaac's a part of that. Like, my level of confidence within each guy kind of varies, but I think that they complement each other well. And I just don't expect a major move this offseason, because the greatest path for the Cavs getting better and taking really meaningful steps in the team building process, I still feel that's coming internally. Like, that comes from internal growth from our three stars that blossomed last season, Colin Sexton, Isaac Okoro, whoever we take with the 14th pick, like even guys like Dean Wade and Lamar Stevens, like all these guys that you've been developing, I'm very interested to see the growth that they make. So I don't expect a lot of big moves this offseason, because there doesn't seem to be a lot of big names that are going to hit the market. Like DeAndre Ayton, there's no reason to be interested in him. He's probably going to get paid more than Jared Allen is, and I don't think he's a better player than Jared Allen. Certainly is not a better fit and wouldn't be worth messing up the chemistry. Like, I think that...
I'll bet JB never has to bench him and tell the press that it was an internal reason, if you know what I'm saying.
That's probably a fair bet, but I banking on that internal growth and giving them the chance to grow is also like, if you have to make a consolidation move down the road, you're probably going to have a little bit more bullets in the chamber to pull off a move like that, because I can't imagine that the value of like Isaac Okoro, Colin Sexton, and some of these other guys, even Caris LeVert, who had a tough kind of time with the Cavs after the trade and was a move that doesn't appear to have worked out initially, I have to imagine that he's going to have the opportunity to rehab his value a little bit this season as well. And if there comes an opportunity to make a meaningful move that you feel isn't selling short, you obviously do that if the opportunity becomes available. But I just, looking at kind of the rumors that are out there and the names that are available, like, there just doesn't seem a lot, like there's a lot of paths to that kind of a shakeup being available for the Cavs. So for me, that just means more research on pick 14, because I just kind of have the feeling that that is probably the best way to add talent right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I mean, they're in a weird spot where they have three guys that are in their uber core, you know, and Jarrett, Evan, and Darius, and then four or five guys that are kind of right on that periphery. So, you know, there is room for consolidation moves. There is.
God, I forgot Laurie. Yeah. I'm sorry, man.
It's okay. You're just a bad person and a bad Cavs fan.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's room for moves and flexibility, you know, if the right opportunity presents itself. But yeah, I mean, in the meantime, I think that we should be expecting the Cavs to make a pick with this selection and have that player join the Cavs. And again, I just do want to remind our listeners, this might be a summer league and garbage time type of player. The first year, this team has expectations and talent, and that tends to be pretty antithetical to 19 and 20 year olds.
Yeah, and might have a full mid-level exception to use as well. Like, who knows? Maybe you're bringing in a player like Kyle Anderson or someone that fills the need because you went a little more raw in the draft, and that player is going to need time. So there's so many variables that are yet to be revealed for this Cavs offseason. I'm really excited to see the direction that this goes. The draft is going to sneak up on us really, really quickly. I'm just kind of hopeful now that we know the order, we know what teams are picking where, that the rumor mill is going to start churning, that we're going to start hearing how teams value players, what guys they like, what guys they don't like, what opportunities are going to be available. I think it's going to be a really, really interesting month, and we will, of course, be covering all of those stories and providing whatever context we can provide. A big thanks to everyone that tuned in live on the YouTube. I know we are counter-programming the Eastern Conference finals right now, but we appreciate you guys sticking with us. If you want to support the podcast, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cats.